Now, secondly, we come to the Bhikshu Sangha. This consists of those who have gone forth, as it's technically called, from the household life and joined the monastic order founded by the Buddha. I say monastic order, though the word monastic, when we use it in a Buddhist context, has a rather different connotation from what it has in the Christian West. Sometimes when we speak, I know in this country, a Buddhist monastery, people tend to think of a great building with high walls all round, and they think of the inmates as being enclosed, shut up in little cells with grills, and not being allowed to go out. But a Buddhist monastery, which is called a vihara, which means simply the dwelling, the abode, is not like that at all. Now, the Bhikshu Sangha, the Buddha's order of monks, has a common rule which is known as the Pratimoksha, and this Pratimoksha is a list of 150 items which are divided into five groups according to the seriousness of breaking the rules in each group, plus two other groups. I'm not going into this in detail because it isn't of much interest to ordinary people. But one enters the Sangha, the monastic order, one becomes a monk when one is ordained by a local Sangha or chapter consisting of at least five fully ordained monks, including at least one stavira or elder. And the tradition is that one remains under tutelage, as it were, at least for 5 years, if not for 10. Now, at the time of ordination, you're handed over to a senior monk, who may be the one that presided at your ordination, it may be another, and you're supposed to remain with him, as I say, for at least 5, preferably for 10 years. And it is significant that only staviras, only those who have been 10 years in the order, may act as teachers in this way. Now, the duties of the monk in Buddhism are manifold. First of all, to study and practice the Dharma, the Buddha's teaching, especially meditation. Secondly, to set an example to the laity. Thirdly, to preach and to teach. Fourthly, this sounds a bit odd in the West, but it's a very present reality in the East, to protect from unwholesome psychic influences. In the East, and in Buddhist circles also, the presence or reality of psychic influences of various kinds is very strongly believed in. That there are sort of occult forces abroad in the sort of psychic atmosphere which may be good, beneficial, or which may be bad, harmful. And it is believed that the monks, by their austerities, by their meditations, by their blessings, can ward off these from ordinary people who might otherwise be affected by them. And in the East, this is regarded as a very important service rendered by the Sangha. In the West, of course, this aspect of monastic life isn't nearly so prominent. We might even say it's non-existent. But historically, traditionally, the monks do fulfill this function, do perform this role. And lastly, but perhaps by no means least, it's one of the functions of the monk to give worldly advice. You find in the East that whenever things go wrong, whether you quarrel with your wife, or whether your children are disobedient, or whether you're short of money, or whether you got into some sort of scrape or difficulty, you go and tell the monks all about it, and you ask their advice. And by mere virtue of the fact that they're detached from all these worldly things, and they don't have any wives themselves or children themselves or anything else of that sort themselves, they can take an objective, detached sort of view, just as it said, the spectator sees more of the game than the players, and they can give, usually, quite constructive advice about these things. So this is one of the services, not only services, regarded one of the duties of the monk in Buddhist countries. For instance, we know even in the day of the Buddha was once approached by a young man whose wife was a real terror. And the young man said, "Lord, I've been married only a few months, but I feel like running away from it. She's just awful." So the Buddha said, "All right, I'll come to your house and I'll see what I can do about it." So the Buddha was invited to the house by the young husband, and he just sat there, had his lunch, because it was served ceremonially. She had to, of course, cook it and bring it. So afterwards, the Buddha called her, and he made the husband and the young wife sit down. And as the custom was, he gave a sermon. And he said in the course of his sermon, there are seven kinds of wives. Huh? I don't know whether you know this passage. It's a quite interesting one. He said, there is the wife who is like a friend. I don't remember them all. I'll tell you as many as I do remember. There's the wife who is like a friend. There is the wife who is like a mother. There is the wife who is like a thief. There is the wife who is like a master. There is the wife who is like a servant. And in this way he enumerated seven kinds of wives. So then he turned to the young wife and he said very sweetly, very nicely, "And which kind of wife do you want to be?" So the poor girl didn't know which way to turn, so she bowed very humbly and said, "I would like to be the wife who is like a servant." So after that, we are told, the young husband had no more trouble with his wife. So this story should not be told to argue that according to the Buddha, the wife is like a servant is the best kind of wife. No, he just put it before her and she herself decided. And in this way, the Buddha helped the young man out of that scrape. So that we see in the Buddha's life, the Buddha's biography, he was always doing this sort of thing. So this is one of the functions of the monks, to give advice even about worldly affairs, worldly matters. Now nowadays in Buddhist countries there are two branches of the monastic order, what we call the Theravada branch, which we find in Ceylon, Burma, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, and the Sarvastivada branch, which we find in Tibet and in China, in Vietnam and in Korea. There's very, very little difference between the way of life and the rules observed by the monks of these two great traditions. They've got the same pratimoksha, the same list of 150 basic rules to be observed. Japan is rather a special case because though the bhikshu or monastic ordination was introduced there some centuries ago, it died out and was replaced by the bodhisattva ordination and other ordinations of different kinds. While we're on the subject, it should also be said that one mustn't confuse a lama with a bhikshu or monk. Lama is a separate category. When people study Tibetan Buddhism, they think a lama means a monk, but it doesn't. A lama means a spiritual teacher. He's usually a monk, but not always, not necessarily so, especially among the Nyingma Pas and the Kagyupas. Now, so much for the Sangha, in the ecclesiastical sense more, of the monastic order.